Thank you, everybody. And I'd like to introduce our speaker for this evening, Miss Kelly from Chula Vista. Our very own. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Good evening. Kelly Alcoholic. Just to start off, Mary was there at the very beginning. 10 years. Jeez. All right. My sobriety date is July 26, 2015. Just feeling a little bit overwhelmed right now, just looking at these faces. And I can look around and I can see pretty much new faces, and I can see pretty much people that I have seen pretty much every day, every meeting for the last 10 years. And for that, I'm grateful. And for that, I know how this program works. And if it was not for AA, I would not be standing up here. I would probably be laying in a ditch somewhere. I don't know, you know? Definitely dead. The way that, they say this disease is progressive, and I didn't understand what that meant, but now I do, after these 10 years and being around here and reading the book. For the newcomers, first time, stick around. This is what you get. Welcome home. Right here on this table here, my sister flew in from Washington. I have my mom, my other mothers who are best friends with my mom, my second dad, Larry, my two beautiful sons, Alex and Robert, my sponsor, Irene, and her husband, Larry Jose, and of course, you know Murphy. If you don't, get to know her. And my wonderful husband, Jose. This is what you get. Family. So my story isn't that unusual. I was blessed to be born to, I'm the baby. This older sister here. I was blessed to be born in a family of a mom and dad who cherished and loved us and provided a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful home. It was so wonderful that when I thought that I got married, that you find your man, you get married, and life was happily ever after. I mean, that was it. And all I ever wanted to do, my dad was in the Navy, I wanted to marry a sailor and live in Navy housing, and I was gonna... Big dreams. And I was going to have four kids, and they were going to be Mary, Harry, Carrie, and Larry. See? True story, true story. I stopped at two sons, and their names are not Mary, Harry, Carrie, Larry. Could have been. All I ever wanted to be was a wife, a mom, because that was what was showed to us in our house. Every time we left the house, we hugged and kissed and said, I love you. Every night, we said, we love you. There was the love and the safety and the protection at home. When I was 11 years old, and to go back, I was that one girl that I only wanted to wear dresses, and I had to have my pretty little purse, and I had to have my little bows, and just, you know, the little princess. Very, very mature for my age. I think one time my mom said she's 4 going on 21. I think at one time in my life I remember saying, oh, my life is so boring. It didn't get boring. Threw that out the door. I never felt like I fit in. I always felt like that outsider looking in. I remember my sister, she always had tons of friends. She in high school, she played all the sports, she was just, you know, and I just, that just wasn't me. I constantly fought to fit in, and I didn't know where I fit in. I didn't, and I didn't know why. I just thought it was just me. So when I was 11 years old and in sixth grade, I had come down to disease, alopecia areata. And for those of you who don't know, I lost all my hair when I was 11 years old. And I had to wear wigs from the time that I was 11 till I was 17. And as we all know, kids in school, especially junior high, aren't that nice. And they would run down the halls and tease me and try to pull my wigs off. And I would come home and cry. And my mom would sit on the couch and I would say, "Why me, Mom? Why me?" And she goes, "I don't know, honey. But one day you'll know. One day you will know." I said, "Mom, please don't make me go back to school." She goes, "You have to. Life is hard and bad things happen, but you got to get up and you got to do it." And now knowing as a mom, that is the hardest thing to do. So they did things to, you know, keep me safe at school. The one thing was not to make me the helper in the cafeteria. that was bad. Being the front line in the cafeteria lines. But you know, and then shortly thereafter, I became old news. So all through school, I didn't fit in. All of my friends were being cheerleaders and marching band and everything, and then there was me. So I always kind of just gravitated to anybody that was older because I felt like older people, I just related better. I felt not the teasing and the, you know, the young games that the youngs play. When I was 14, I met my first husband, my son's dad. And he was a bit older than me, and we were together for about 10 years. We had two beautiful sons. I had my first son, Robert, when I was 19, and then Alex when I was 23. When I was 25, Robert was 5, and Alex was 1, and I was leaving my ex-husband. And it was the hardest thing that I had to do. To say that it was the best marriage, it wasn't. There was a lot of fighting, you know, some rough times. And to be able to get up and leave with two small babies, I never lived by myself. But you know what? When in my head told me, my mom told me, you got to get up and you got to do it. And I had two babies that I had to take care of, and it was just me. And I was just telling a story. I lived in over on 8th Street, Oaklawn Avenue, by the trolley, and it was a little 700 square foot apartment, and the bedrooms were right next to each other, and I was afraid to sleep in separate bedrooms and have the boys be in their own bedroom. So I found a mattress, and we would lay it on the floor in the living room. And the three of us would sleep there together. And during that time, I had been working for some banks and savings and loans, and I got laid off. It was the time of, you know, the early 90s. They were all closing down. I think one place I got fired from, I don't know, I can't remember why. Probably doing bad shit. And you know, in all this time, I could, quote, handle my drinking. I could pick it up, I could not. You know, when I was in high school, it was the late 80s. A lot of stuff was going around. There was a lot of, you know, different party favors. And, you know, I would try it and leave it. It was never a big deal. Fast forward, here I am in my late 20s, decided to go back to college, and got my degree in legal studies. And I remember, just so that I could, I didn't have to work and I could go to school full time, to pay my $485 a month rent, I had to get a roommate. And we could split everything in the food, and she had a little girl, and we went to school together, and the kids, and the five of us lived in this apartment. And but I got through school, and sometimes, and it's, you know, back in the day where you had to use the typewriter and to type things, and I couldn't stay at the law library and study. I had to, like, go and make copies of all of these pages or whatever, and then go home, and we would put the Barney tape on so the kids could watch Barney, and we would hear, I love you, over and over and over, you know, while we were, you know, studying. And I did what I had to do, because I knew that I had to have a career, because I had to support these babies. And you know, it never even occurred to me back then about how every decision that I made was based out of fear and survival. I didn't even think. I couldn't. You know, when I say that, one time, shortly after I had separated from my ex, and I don't know, when we were married, we had bought a dining room table from Sears and put it on credit card. And when I got separated, I had to file bankruptcy. And I remember at the bankruptcy court, and I remember my attorney saying, do you know where the table is? And he's looking at me, trying to tell me, no, you don't. And I go, yeah, it's right in my kitchen, you know. And Sears actually came and repossessed my kitchen table. And I remember, like, when they came and got it, and the kids were young and stuff, and I had a coffee table, and I got some pillows out on the floor, and I said, guess what, guys? We're going to sit on the floor, and we're going to have dinner. And you know, when the lights got turned off, look it, we get to play with flashlights, you know. Let's go to Grammy's house, you know. And I did my best grocery shopping at Grammy's house. You know, I'd get my mom and dad would go out of town, and I would get my trash sack and go over there and, you know, dig around in the pantry and the freezer, and along with my mother's clothes. and, you know, the boys and I, there was a lot of chaos. There was a lot of not some violence around there. And my mom just said, just keep loving them. They're going to be okay. Just keep loving them. And by the grace of God, they got into sports. And they had a lot of positive role models around them. My dad, he was, you know, he was the one that was always there for all of us. And I remember when I had first got separated and things were kind of bad, and my sister and her husband were saying, just come up here. Come move up here. You could live with us. You could get a job. You could, you know. And I was really thinking about it. And then I thought, no, I want my kids to grow up around my parents. I want that for them. We didn't have that. We were Navy brats. We moved here when I was 8 years old, and before that, we lived in Texas, New Mexico, Hawaii, Iceland. And just to let you know, like, what a little brat I was when I was little, my sister was born in Hawaii, and I was born in New Mexico, and I would yell at my mom, why did she get to be born in Hawaii? You love her more than me. True fact. You know, because in my head, that was how much everybody and everything was against me, just by that. That's what my mind would tell me. Perception is a wonderful thing. So, moving along, working 10, 12-hour days, building my career, all the while my sons are, they had to sign up for sports, and every team, they got selected for the travel team. So every weekend we were in Los Angeles, Arizona, Vegas, and, you know, through that we had so many friends and so many, it was, it was the one thing that we needed in our lives. And although that sometimes I didn't know how I was going to drive, I didn't know how I was going to get the gas money or, you know, whatever, but it always just worked out. And we always did it, and I, you know, always made it happen. At one point, my one son, Robert, he was playing roller hockey, and he was a goalie. And I would joke that when he had all of his goalie gear on, he was worth more than the car that I was driving. I should have put the insurance on him. And along that way, I mean, we were just blessed. We were blessed with generous friends, with a loving family, and everybody just, you know, took care of us. All the while, I'm drinking, but I'm not really drinking. And everybody would tell me, like, when I was at work and my other friends, and they would just say, gosh, Cal, you are so strong. You're amazing. You're so strong. And I'd be like, ha, ha, ha. And inside, I was dying. I was dying. I didn't even have time to think about everything that was going on around me because I got to get to work. I got to pay these bills. I got to do what I got to do. But I didn't feel strong. I just had to move on. And I said, you know, maybe one day when the boys are older, maybe that's when I'll breathe, you know, when I can relax a little bit. Well, that happened. I should have never breathed. So the boys are a little bit older, and I have a little bit more freedom. And I, you know, start hanging out with friends. We start drinking. And then it just starts becoming, this is it. This is the ticket. Why not have a cocktail at work? It won't hurt, you know. And this other secretary in the office, she was all for it too. So we'd start making our cocktails at work, and it made the day go by so much better. And you know, and then it was waking up with that horrible hangover, and I'm not gonna have a hangover. So you know, and then it became all the things that you say that you're never gonna do. You're never gonna have that drink in the morning. You're never gonna drink alone. And change beer to whiskey, the whole thing. And, you know, that was my life. And, it, you know, it just progressed. It progressed where it was the weekends or one night a week until it was every single day, 24 hours a day, because that's where my disease takes me. And, you know, and it's funny now people say, we never even know. I'm like, because I was drunk all the time. I always had something in me. And... you know, this is, and I know that other alcoholics in these rooms can relate. I always had my vodka in my Diet Coke, and sometimes it was really light. But I had a Diet Coke bottle in my car and did not have any vodka in it. And my son got in the car, and he never drank soda, and he opened it, and he took a drink. And I, in my head, I'm thinking, ha-ha. I got you, there's no vodka in it, you know? Like, I won something over, like, but that he did that as a teenager, it kills you. I mean, back then it didn't, because I was, you know, but today, looking back on that, and, you know, I always said my kids were older, I really didn't drink that much when they were younger. My family, my mom and dad, we socially drink, we're just hanging out, nobody knew. But looking back on all the times I wasn't present, I couldn't be there. I was constantly looking for something else or looking for something inside of me. And I missed a lot. I missed a lot of times worrying and making up stuff and creating chaos in my life. And, you know, I'll say this every day, you know, for all of you young mothers that get this and young fathers that get this program early, God bless you. I wish that God would have had that for me, but it wasn't my time, you know? But what a blessing. What a blessing. And it's a blessing anytime that you get sober. And like I said, this is what you get back. You know, I think that for me, all of the other, the financial stuff came, worked hard, you know, I was able to buy a house and everything, but all of that is just bonuses, really, you know? I often would say, when I have this, then I'll be happy. When I have this, and, you know, looking at all my friends, and they were all real grown-ups doing real grown-up things, and I didn't know who I was. I certainly didn't feel like a grown-up. I was just out there just swimming in this world of, I just felt, you know, I couldn't keep up. When I was about 36, and my son changed high schools, and he was playing basketball, and I called the head coach, and I said, I want to check on, you know, my son's grades. You know, can you tell me basketball season's coming? I want to make sure it's okay. And they said, yeah, my assistant coach does that. Coach Mendoza, call him. That's that guy right there. He stepped up, and, you know, he did a lot. He's that man that takes care of any and every kid there is. And it was rough. We dated, we say the Witness Protection Program. Got a little rocky there, and we broke up for 6 weeks. And you know, he allowed me to make every kind of sacrifice that I needed to make to get to where we needed to be. And luckily, by the grace of God, it all worked out. I was, in 2010, I was drinking pretty much real heavy, and I showed up to work one day, and I hadn't even really drank that much. And I was really, I didn't even know how I drove to work. And my boss and they kind of figured out I was drunk. I don't know how. So they told me to go home, come back when I have a program, when I get some help. But they'd be there. I remember calling my mom. She was at the tire store or something with my dad. And I said, I'm an alcoholic. And she goes, I know. What? I called my husband. I'm an alcoholic. Damn. I know. We're here. And it's always right after you buy the biggest bottle, too. I was usually the one that bought little bottles because then you can hide it better, you know. I'm not going to lug around this big bottle. Turn that over, and then I said, I have to do something. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I found this outpatient program at Scripps. So I went 3 nights a week from like 5 to 8 or 8:30 or something, and it was exact. They told me it was 8 weeks. So I calculated it out because it was going to be the starting of basketball season. And I think my youngest son was, it was 2010, he was going to be a senior or junior. But I got to get this shit under control because I got to make it for his basketball. And I remember going home and kind of saying like, don't worry, mom's just going to go over here and I'm going to go to these classes and, you know, just things are going to be better. And don't anybody change their lives. It's cool. It's just, you know, it's just me. And I remember sitting in that room and during group talk and everything, and people were sharing about how their father committed suicide in front of them. This thing happened to this person. And I'm sitting there like, the frick is wrong with you, Kelly? You have nothing, nothing to be drinking over. Nothing. And I remember asking the person in charge, I don't understand why I'm an alcoholic. This is the best time of my life. When stuff was really, really bad, I wasn't drinking. Why now? And he goes, it doesn't matter. You're an alcoholic. And I couldn't get it. And then, of course, they passed out the AA literature, and I overheard somebody saying, AA doesn't work. Oh, AA doesn't work. Just so you know. And so I never went to an AA meeting. I did my 8 weeks. And I, one day shortly thereafter, I came home and I said to Jose, I said, we should get married. And he said, we should. Okay. And we started dating in March. And so I said, let's look at March. And we picked March 26. And so for the first 6 months of my sobriety, I planned our wedding. And looking back on it now, it was a hot mess. I didn't know what I was doing. And if it wasn't for the man that God chose for me, it would have been a disaster. Because I guarantee, when you were newly sober and not going to AA and not undoing all the dews and the onion layers and the layers and coming off and, you know, everything that we need to do to know who we are, do not get married. Do not. There is a reason that they tell us newcomers, do not date or anything at least the first year. There is a reason. Thank goodness that God chose the right man for me. And I think I stayed sober like about a year and a half or so. I said, I'm not really an alcoholic. It's just vodka. That's my thing. And so, you know, as long as I didn't drink the vodka, I'd be okay. And I pretty much lied to everybody. I would drink around my husband, and I would make him enable my drinking. Don't you tell anybody. I had, quote, non-alcoholic sangria. It wasn't. And I remember having a cocktail, and the boy said, are you okay, Mom? I'm like, fine, everything's good. You know, I got this under control now. And I just remember, you know, looking. I didn't have shit under control. And so for another, I don't know, 2-3 years, it was just on. It was just back to where it was, stronger, more messed up. And on a Saturday afternoon, Jose was out for the week at a business trip, and I remember seeing this bag, trash bag, and it was full of my vodka bottles. I was like, damn, why did I leave that there? And then I started cluing in, and I don't know how they found them or where they found them, but they found my hidden bottles, because I don't know why us alcoholics like to keep things and hide things. I don't know why we just don't throw our bottles away. I remember seeing that, and they came in to the room, and they said, we love you, Mom, but enough's enough. You've got to get help. And I remember just crying and just, you know, I'm the mom. You're not supposed to take care of me. That's what I do for you. And let me tell you, that week, I didn't even, my husband was in Vegas at a work conference, and we were talking, but not really. I mean, you know, and I went to my first AA meeting. The boys, I was detoxing and not sleeping, and they would bring me smoothies. Did you eat, Mom? Yeah. And I remember, you know, one day I was trying to find a meeting, and I couldn't find it. And it was Tuesday, and I got all flustered, and I just came home, and I'm like, I can't find it. I can't find it. And then well, I said, come on, Mom. Let's go to the park. Let's go to the park. And, of course, you know, they're athletes, and so their thing is, you know, run it out. Sweat. You got to sweat. I'm like, you know. And I was running up the hill, and, you know, boy, I was sweating it out, that's for sure. And it was, you know, I made it through that day. And then I made it the next day. And then, you know, I started making my rounds. I went to Monday, Wednesday, and Friday meetings. And every Friday after the four-minute speaker, I got... Well, at first I didn't, but then I got asked to go to IHOP after the meeting with Mary and Bud and Grandpa and Dan. And I remember sitting there in IHOP, and I'm like, damn, this is it. This is my life. This was not what I did on Friday nights. When I was young, I was, you know, a young single mom, and I didn't go out. I was raising my kids. During that time, you know, I was having a good time. Later, and I was like, now I'm at IHOP. And I have to drink, you know, coffee out of styrofoam cups and, you know, basements of churches. What the hell? But I got invited, and I felt like I was in. When I first came in, I did not think that I was worthy enough that nobody would want to sponsor me. I couldn't even ask anybody to sponsor me. I got, finally at about year two, I was losing it. And I just remember, I said, I didn't take a token in my 2 year. And we were at 4 minute speaker. And Mary said, I got you a token. And I wouldn't even stand up. I just sat there and cried. So shortly thereafter, for those of you that know Paulette, I said, Paulette, and she said, call me. And that was it. And that got me started on my journey of doing the steps, being of more service, clearing the wreckage of the past and all those things. And, you know, little bit by little bit, I started getting to know who I was and learning about me for the first time and feeling things and going through everything, the hardest things. That I never even thought that I could do. And today, I know exactly who I am, and I know that I am enough, and that's a period after that. I don't have to be anybody else but who I am. And never in my life did I ever think that would be me. I didn't think like people like me could buy a house, people like me could have a job that they love, that they have responsibilities, that I have the job that I have. And I prayed, I remind myself of this, I prayed really hard for the job that I have and the life that I have. I never imagined it would happen for somebody like me. And when I tell you that, it makes no sense, because I was not raised with that. I didn't have that ugliness, that anger, that, you know. It was just inside of me. And coming in these rooms, I learned we're alcoholics, and that's it. It doesn't matter why. I just am. I was blessed to be born this way, because today it's a blessing. And I fought it. I have fought this disease and fought me being a real true alcoholic deep down inside of me. And when I work with my sponsor and she sits there and she tells me, go home, get on your knees and pray and surrender and don't get up until it's gone. Give it away. And I think over this last year is when I finally decided, or God decided, because I don't run the show anymore, that I'm okay. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. And to look down on myself, yeah, I am an alcoholic. But out of that, and all of that ugliness and all that chaos, my two sons are the most loving, kind, generous, humble young men that you would ever meet. God knew what he was doing when he had me meet their dad so that I could have those two treasures. And for that, forever grateful. I have a life that, you know, is beyond anything I ever dreamed of. I might not have that sailor. I have an army man. He was in the army. You know, in this program, when I first came in, I came in July, and my dad had been suffering from cancer for many years. And in that next January, his cancer came back with a vengeance, and it had metastasized to his lungs and his spine. And he went through, you know, chemotherapy and radiation and everything. And those 5 years were difficult. They were hard. But you know what? God got me sober because he knew what was coming. And he knew that I had to be there. And I did not want my parents to worry about me. And, you know, during COVID, my dad passed away on July 4th, 2020. And because of COVID, my sister got stuck here with us for 6 months. And it was one of the, I hate to say best things, but the four of us were together. And we were helping my mom take care of my dad. And my sons that are usually not around, and then they were home because of COVID. And we all got to be there. And, you know, my sister and I, those last few days, we got to be on the clock every 2 hours to give my dad his morphine. We all got to be there. And you know what? If I would have been out there, I would have taken that morphine. I wouldn't have been there. Or I myself would have been so drunk, I would not have been present. And I got to be present for that. And I get to be present every day. And you know, when we were growing up, it was always much more like my dad and my sister and my mom. Personalities are much more. And I always thought, you know, it was me and Dad and my mom and Kim, and now and you know, and so my disease tells me, you know, I'm all alone, but I'm not. We have this beautiful relationship, and we laugh and we cry and we do a lot together, and we're so blessed. And you know, this last spring, we got the blessing of going to Turkey, and my mother, I won't say your age, but, you know, we had such a bad time, but talk to my husband afterward, because he had to take me, my sister, and my mom, and talk about a true blessing. There's not a lot of men that could be on a trip for 3.5 weeks with their mother-in-law and their sister-in-law, and they're not quiet. They tell him what to do. But you know, these are the blessings. This is it. I mean, I can do anything that I want to do. And I never even knew that. I remember, like, when I, and I'll close up pretty quick here. I remember I would see people, like a beautiful woman all dressed up and everything. And, oh, if I can only, why can't I do that? Why can't I dress like that? And when I got sober, and I remember thinking that and started getting into that, and I thought, well, I have that skirt. I have that top at home. And it, like, literally like a light bulb turned on. Like, you know, you don't have to stand in the background. I can be inside the herd. I can be in life and living it. I don't look from the outside anymore. I'm all up in it. You know, if you're new, stick around. It's a slow program, but it works. And it's every single frickin' day. You know, when you think you got it, you don't got it. And you know what? When those hard times come and you get through it and you get on the other side, and then you think, wow, that's what was happening. And it's beautiful. And you know, I wouldn't trade this life and IHOP and stinky basement churches and strong coffee for anything in the world, because this AA gave me back to who I was and am today. And for that, I will be forever grateful. And I love you all. And man, just sitting here looking at the table, and this is, you know, a true miracle. A true miracle. Thank you. Thank you.